We all wanted to see some rain for this race. I think we might have wanted it a little bit too hard. And that wasn't the end of the controversy either. But for Verstappen though, this was a really bad farewell to Zandvoort. He spent Saturday fighting the car and 6th in the sprint, became 7th on Sunday's grid, with Lawson only a 10th behind him, and we'll talk more about that later. Then of course came the frantic opening lap where Verstappen made light contact with Hamilton and Lawson before accelerating across the slippery white line of the banking. Then the rear completely slipped away from him, he then hit the top wall, and then that was that, really. It was a horrific looking crash, and the absolute stunned silence of the crowd. I was right there in the middle of it, and all the DJs panicking, no wait, don't leave. They didn't leave, by the way, as you'll see in my vlog of the entire Grand Prix weekend I posted yesterday. But even though their man was gone, they were more than happy to watch the rest of the race unfold. He could not get a podium this weekend, and he left the entire situation with only 3 points to his name, whereas his teammate was able to score double that. And not to mention, after he signed his Red Bull contract extension, the team was hinting that they might have gone backwards since the Hungarian Grand Prix, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to find out in the fullness of time, or even very soon, that development on the RB22 might cease to focus on next year's car. And given now that Max is with them through 2030, that might be a very likely scenario, and we could easily expect a little bit more awkward moments with Max slipping further and further away from the top three. But hey, at least he seemed rather calm after what happened, and it was very much a surprising mistake given the conditions and how quickly it dried up after that. It's just a case of, really unfortunate situation there. The white line. And then we should talk about the fallout from the Verstappen crash, because Franco Colapinto's day, oh my goodness, what might have been, eh? Because his start, he went from 14th to 10th in that older spec Alpine, Gasly having the brand new one for Zandvoort. It looked like that maybe we might have been having a Colapinto to ring in the second half of the season. But alas, it wasn't meant to be. Out of all the kerfuffle between what was a green flag and a yellow flag, and of course taking evasive action, it resulted in the Argentine getting a yellow flag infringement warning, which then became a drive-through penalty. And a penalty point to his name as well, because as evidence has unfolded, it's become very clear that from different angles, it would have been impossible to have done anything else than overtaking a slow Tsunoda, who was also taking evasive action from Bortoleto and Verstappen and all of that. And then another 10-second penalty for another yellow flag issue just made it even worse. And that Franco was punished somewhat harshly, but I suppose in the midst of the carnage, things just slipped on by. But I certainly don't think Colapinto tried to gain from any of it. Very little time between actually doing anything from normal conditions to yellow flag conditions. It was really, really bad though, because he wasn't the only one who got hauled up, which made the situation even more awkward. But hey, at least he wasn't driving a Williams, because say it with me now, the sprint for Carlos became another extended test session. The changes did help for Q1, even though he still qualified 17th, and it helped his teammate even more, as we'll talk about in a moment. Then Sunday briefly looked better as a long first stint brought him into the top 10, but then on worn tyres, Sainz locked up into turn 1, and we got that incident. It was a very shocking one, but one that the team was very quick to defuse, and neither driver was looking to try and blame the other. Carlos, unlike what happened with Piastri, took the blame and then took a 10-second penalty. And then when it came to Albon, he basically lacked downforce the entire weekend, even though he was able to get into SQ2 and Q2, albeit barely, and it meant that he also had to take an earlier pit stop than he would have liked to, and it just thusly meant his entire strategy was thusly compromised. And when it came to the collision itself with Sainz, he really just described it as a racing incident, not really keen to try and set things off. But the timing though of all this, oh my absolute goodness. After them declaring themselves to be Williams drivers for next year at the very least, that happened, and without context, it looks like an absolute controversy and scandal has hit the team. No, it's just a really duff set of tyres, which unfortunately led to that crash, I mean. And then it becomes pertinent to talk about my boy, because the sprint was bad enough watching him being in relative no man's land to the top four. But then when it came to the race itself, it started off so well. Not that far off what happened at Hungary, even though the results were not looking as grand. I mean, I certainly thought a podium was possible, because he was certainly electric off the line, and then he was able to pass Russell as well. But then when he went onto the hard tyre, it just completely fell from there with a slow stop. I think he did maybe three or four stops. It was certainly way more than everyone else in the top six. Both Ferraris passed him, while Norris came alive on the same compound, finishing 32 seconds ahead of Oscar. He now trails Norris by 55 points, and whilst McLaren aren't concerned with his performance, believing other factors were at play, it's really not looking good, especially since he could have done well. But now his teammates romping off with a potential title challenge. And then there's Cadillac. Hey, no double retirements this time. That was Haas's job. The checkers weekend started with a hydraulic issue, but it did mean Sunday was more respectable. Perez overcutting Bottas and showing enough pace to mix with the Williams. Before then, he had a badly timed virtual safety car, which meant he couldn't do better than 15th. The car is indeed catching up to the Williams, so it's showing that this car is not frightfully off of the back, even though it's certainly got some work to do to try and not be the worst team, although Williams have not really got much to do until they have their Baku upgrade. And then, come the race itself, Bottas, even though over one lap he did have the measure over Checo, it was his turn to have the hydraulic issue over the race, because without much fanfare, he had to box to retire the car. So, traditions. Yeah. It's the new tradition. And his sixth retirement of the season in 12 rounds. I mean, again, at least they're not depressingly off of the back, and at least it wasn't double retirement. That was what Haas had to experience after having a very dismal Friday and Saturday. I thought it couldn't get any worse for them. But then, ultimately, based on their own diagnostics, what Behrmann and Ocon experienced over the race itself was down to the power unit just conking out. And even though there is an upgrade coming for Monza, I don't really think it's going to be bringing them much joy, especially with Audi catching up at quite a considerable rate now, and 7th is looking very vulnerable. This upgrade needs to work. Behrmann describing the weekend as horrible, and I think that's quite a fair description. He made a strong start and survived Verstappen's first lap issue, but then on the second formation lap is when his Haas shut down. And even though Haas got some useful race mileage with Ocon, and the Frenchman was actually able to reach Q2 on both days, besting his teammate, it's not really going to be giving Haas much comfort. But it might give the driver a little bit of comfort, especially since his seat is so vulnerable. But a driver that's not really feeling comfortable right now, or may not do in the fullness of time, is Lance Stroll. This car showed enough improvement to actually be points worthy, but it made Stroll's weekend look even worse, finishing 17th in the sprint, qualifying 19th, despite the upgraded Honda package, and then of course he had early damage, which meant eventually he had to retire the car. All the while, Alonso was able to actually start from 18th, one place higher than Stroll, and finished 9th. Just that stark contrast is just a sursaut of what we experienced back in 2023. If Alonso can drag that Aston Martin further and further up, you know, whereas Stroll is either treading water or barely able to keep up with the Spaniard, who is older than nearly to be his dad, that is only just going to remind people of what befell that Canadian 3 years ago. And yeah, Aston only has 3 points to their name, but Stroll is still without any single of those points to his name. And especially galling for him is that this car is kind to its tyres. We'll get to that in Alonso's section because he is clearly a winner, duh. And I do suspect Honda are able to upgrade the engine in terms of just turning up the wick a little bit more, improving the drivability. We might see Stroll improve, but this weekend, returning from the summer break, yeah, that wasn't ideal for the Canadian. And what wasn't ideal as well was what happened to Lindblad, because that was just tragic for him, because not only did it end the point streak that Lindblad had, the double point streak his team had, but he believed, Arvid, that 8th place could have been his had he been able to capitalise on the fact that in both qualifying sessions he was able to get 10th at a track he's never been to before. It's one of the unsung stories of the entire weekend. Nobody really talked about it. The only thing that people were talking about was him getting a yellow flag infringement and then a drive-through penalty, just like Franco, in very similar circumstances. He argued that avoiding the wreckage was his immediate priority, and the stewards accepted that as mitigation. But mitigation from what? He still got a drive-through penalty. He recovered to 12th with several assertive overtakes, while Racing Bulls used him to delay Gasly, so he did play the team game, but it did ultimately mean that the 8th he thought he could have had went to Hülkenberg. And Alpine barely scored, yeah, but it's really not ideal for this team who really want to get 5th in the Constructors. And what wasn't ideal either was Leclerc's weekend, mixing one smart Ferrari gamble with one big missed opportunity. Because surely you agree with me, right, with what happened on Saturday. He started on the soft, which was already a ballsy decision, even though it was a shorter race, but he looked really, really spicy, able to make those tyres last until the end and actually get the jump on Norris to take second. It made you think that in the race, anything was possible. But when we actually got to qualifying in the race, it did see that Leclerc was very much behind his teammate, and what happened with Ferrari and all of their strategies and their calls, it just made Leclerc's weekend even worse, and us seeing a very big ding-dong in terms of controversies with team radio and team orders. But at the very least, he was able to rise from 6th in qualifying to 5th, passing Piastri quite easily, actually. But again, the strategists over at Ferrari meant that 5th was really the best he could have possibly hoped for, again, behind his teammate. And now, because of Norris's victory, he has Leclerc fallen back to 5th place in the championship. So any hope of me being able to realise my prediction that Leclerc was going to win the title, yeah, he's now struggling to try and stay in the top 5. And it wasn't helped by the badly timed virtual safety car, the double stack, and then, of course, you know, a slow stop the first time around. It's just, this team and car has so much potential, and Leclerc can win in this machine. He did it at Silverstone quite handily. But it's just Ferrari dropping the ball for both of its drivers, and with Hamilton outshining him this weekend, it means that Leclerc is very much a resounding bleh. And the same thing could be described for Bortoleto, because just like with Leclerc, it started off really strongly, with qualifying for the sprint in 9th, finishing it in 9th, and even though it doesn't get him a point, it's certainly setting the point that this Audi could score again for a 4th time in a row. And then he did the same thing, getting into Q3, 9th place, quite convincingly. But then the very unfortunate weakness of the Audi power unit, the slowish starts, befell him. He lost places, and then he had a very similar incident of Verstappen spinning around the banked curve, and then it was a minor miracle he didn't sustain a T-bone from Hülkenberg in one of the scariest near misses I've seen in a very long time. Like, Hülkenberg goes through the smoke, and then within half a second, you see the Audi of Bortoleto and him, Hülkenberg, having to veer. I mean, that was absolutely terrifying. And it must have been terrifying for Gabi to see that on playback while the red flag was out. But he was able to try and recover from his lost position. He got to 13th, which wasn't too bad. But this was a situation where we could have seen the Brazilian scoring yet more points. At least we can see that even though Audi are not going to bring more parts to their power unit this year, they may be bringing parts to the car, they could be in the hunt for maybe a go at 7th place and maybe taking that from Haas, because they are that little bit closer. It's just I thought it was going to be the Brazilian doing it, not the German. Frankly, I'm just glad he didn't get injured. And now we move on to the winners, because Lando Norris, I can tell you for a fact that even though this was the Dutch Grand Prix, there are a lot of Lando Norris fans there, and they were very happy to see Lando Norris win and actually show some very champion-worthy performances. I mean, just look at what he was able to do in Q3. Passing Russell to try and get the right situation to get that pole lap, that is what a champion would do. Seriously, after winning in Hungary, Lando's just really turned on, hasn't he? And that was after the sprint exposing a McLaren that chewed through its tyres, similar to what we saw in Miami 2024 before Lando got his first win, where McLaren brought upgrades that needed fettling, and then come race day, they were an absolutely different beast. Despite Antonelli beating him at the restart, he was able to get past him again later on in the race. Unlike with Piastri also, Norris could make the hard tyre work, and even a late virtual safety car couldn't unsettle the Brit. Him winning by 11.5 seconds, and yeah, it's not the 30 seconds he was able to do in Zandvoort 2 years ago, but to come back from the break with another win, that did make things quite spicy, right? But no matter what you say, Lando did a really solid job in recovering from the sprint after Leclerc got the jump on him, and McLaren looked like they were going to be having a really bad time with tyre deg at a circuit that didn't really worry about tyre deg. It was a really curious phenomena. The Sunday proved that Lando could be in with a shot at maybe going for the world title, especially if Antonelli, having a grid drop for Monza, isn't able to try and get back up the grid and Lando has a strong slot. This could be the start of something somewhat curious and giving us some spice toward an already beleaguered season. You must admit, it is a very, very wobbly season in terms of people interested in it. Norris going for his second world title, that might make things a little bit more curious, as indeed Hamilton going for his 8th. But unfortunately for Lewis, this was something that could have been even greater than his fourth place. He didn't get a podium out of it. It could have been a second place. It could have been a win at one. Ferrari just became Ferrari again, and their strategists and that late virtual safety car pit stop ultimately were unnecessary, and it meant that he did fall behind. And then, of course, we had complaints, team orders, and talk of guinea pigs. And let's not forget what he was able to survive at the start of the race, contact with Verstappen, and then getting stuck behind Leclerc for a few more laps than he would have liked to, which meant that him trying to get ahead of Antonelli and Norris, it was just, well, he was leading, and then within a few corners, he was down to third. But hey, at least he could try and chase Russell, but then to rub salt to the wound, he couldn't even get a podium out of it, finishing less than a second behind his former teammate. He said he was here to win. He was getting riled because there is a snifter of a world title. But because of what happened around Zandvoort, he has now fallen down to third in the championship, even though he is equal on points with Russell, but thanks to Russell's two wins to Lewis's one, countback is king here. And indeed, Russell was able to do the deed and get Mercedes back to an ideal situation. Yes, they weren't the dominant force that they thought they would be at the beginning of the season, but Antonelli has come away with increasing his lead slightly in the championship, and Russell getting back second place in said championship. And what should be really concerning for the Brit is that, unlike what we saw at the start of the season, Antonelli is on top of his starts now, thanks to technical improvements as well as training for himself. He had two excellent starts. And for Antonelli, we all thought he was going to be getting yet another victory around here, until McLaren simply proved that after all of their fettling from the sprint, they were able to make those tyres work, those upgrades work, and simply, Antonelli was no match for Norris in terms of keeping the lead. But at the very least, with what Antonelli was able to do last year at Zandvoort, going from that to second place, that's not too shabby. And then, of course, we got the controversial team order situation, with a time where Kimi was not that close to Lando and did end up behind the likes of Russell, with, of course, them making the pit stop, them realising that it probably wasn't worth it, but thanks to them making the call, it meant that Kimi fell behind, so they had to redress the balance. Doesn't that sound a little bit familiar to papaya rules in a way? And it meant that what could have been another second place for Russell became a third place, and it nearly was a fourth place with a very, very rampaging Lewis. And then, of course, let's not forget the sprint pole and win. Russell did come away with some sort of victory from this weekend. He wasn't absolutely doom and gloom, but Sunday, he did look a lot more defensive. He did not look the strongest front-running driver out of any of them. Probably very, very fortunate to be coming away with the sprint win and a third place in the main Grand Prix, and now back to being the runner-up. And Wim and I were discussing about whether or not Russell might actually defy team orders, and then 30 seconds later, he then let Antonelli through at Tarzan. It's just the timing of it was just hilarious. But could we see a more stable half for the likes of George? Well, only time will tell, but time is very limited for Tsunoda, because his one race, for now, deal with racing balls, produced a rather impressive result. And even though it did not produce points, an 11th place, I believe that was probably the most that VCarb could possibly hope for. And it did mean that even though Tsunoda was quite some ways behind Lindblad in qualifying, he did wind up ahead of Lindblad in the main race. Although, as we talked about earlier, that was down to a very stringent penalty. But nevertheless, Yuki will count it as a little bit of a win, as do I. We could have seen Tsunoda really struggle. You know, we're talking like 16th, 17th, being with the Williams and the Caddies and Stroll. And indeed, points could have been possible for the Japanese driver as well, had it not been for the Racing Bulls team attempting a three-stop strategy. And it meant out that he lost out to Alonso's longer approach. And then, of course, he had an off-track moment, so he added some culpability as well. I would say that Yuki didn't disgrace himself, actually, as a last-minute call-up. And if Izuka's out for longer, who knows what Monza might produce for the driver. And then, speaking of all of that, you get to Lawson, the other stand-in. He made a statement by qualifying only a tenth behind Verstappen, with Sunday becoming even weirder when Verstappen crashed on that one, and Lawson suddenly carried Red Bull's hopes alone. And, of course, the to-ing and fro-ing at the start. I mean, I thought Liam and Max were about to actually take each other out. And then all of that became really dull. He was way behind the top three, but yet he was also far ahead of the Audis and the Astons. It meant that really, even though seventh place was his maximum, he at least was able to keep it there and secure 6 points. This time, in the RB22, was a lot more fruitful than it was with the RB21, and maybe might have done enough to maybe get some of the naysayers to think, you know what, maybe Liam had a point about what happened last year. If he can actually do something and actually run his own race and just do a job, then he might be worthy of a place at another team. But now that Max has got the contract and Isaac will be there for a while, this isn't an audition for a Red Bull seat. No, this is to try and show to other teams that, hey, Liam's worth the time. Should we see him leave the team after 2028? It really depends on what they do with Solo. But yeah, I think Liam did what he needed to do, and that is to score points and be in the similar ballpark to what Hadjar's been able to do, him consistently getting top six finishes since Miami. Yeah, it's only seventh, but it's not that bad considering that he's gone from a very stable car to a much pointier car, and he was pretty much getting the same positions he was getting at VCarb. It can't hold a candle to what Alonso did. 18th to 9th? This is now one of the oldest men to have scored points in any F1 Grand Prix. This is absolutely crazy. And Aston aren't done yet. They were able to do that, get points on merit. And there were signs that this car has reduced the deficit to the front runners even more than Hungary did. I think I recall that at one point they were 4 seconds behind the leaders, but now they're down to like 1.3. That is very much getting to territory. That would mean that points and a cheeky Q3 appearance are not that far away. And then Alonso was able to stretch his stints while the midfield closed ahead, and then spent the final pace keeping Gasly out. I mean, fans did notice too, he did finish P2 in the driver of the day standings, and making those soft tyres last for 33 laps, that must be one of his best performances in a while. It makes you wonder what this car could do once it's all squared away. But indeed, there was Pierre. And in spite of the upgraded car, 2 points was all he could muster over both races, but I would still say it was a very narrow win, especially since he narrowly avoided Verstappen as the Red Bull bounced back across the circuit. The rest became a long fight with Audi and Racing Bulls, but at the very least, it did show that Alpine was back figuring at the top of the midfield again. You know what? I think that's why I count it as a win, because it meant that they were actually back to try and defend or at least take back 5th place in the Constructors, what they originally had before VCarb turned up the wick with more consistent performances. Gasly was particularly irritated when Racing Bulls used Lindblad to delay him while Tsunoda escaped ahead, him saying that he would remember the tactic, reminding me very much of the Telltale Games, that. But at least the upgrade got them back in the points conversation, and it makes you wonder what Franco could do, given that he went from 14th to 10th in the old spec, what he could do with the new spec around Monza. Now, Nico Hülkenberg to wrap things off. His weekend started with a power unit problem in the sprint, and then he only got 13th in the qualifying, and then he nearly took out his teammate. So it had been a really calamitous and fraught bit of a weekend all the way through to up to the red flag. But then he was able to extend his soft tyres, albeit not quite as long as the Spaniard. He was able to get past Gasly and Tsunoda, and then before we knew it, he was up to 8th place, and yet more points, equaling the best result that Bortoleto had of P8, 4 points. They now have 16, and it was the German driver able to do it, dragging his team to within 5 points of 7th placed Haas. Now both drivers are firing all cylinders. Who's to say what this team can actually do going into the final race of the season? And I think the fact that Hülkenberg can actually speak Dutch very, very well helped him and definitely gave him a little bit of a fan boost in a way. But yeah, that Audi, not only does it sound amazing in real life, its performance is becoming that little bit more amazing as well, especially in the midfield. This is their first season, let's not forget, their first power unit, and they've produced a banger in terms of sound. In terms of the overall package, it's steadily becoming a very impressive one too, this being yet another points finish. I'm just stunned, and I'm really happy for Nico as well. And it's certainly going to take a lot of pressure off in terms of people thinking that he's washed. He celebrated his 39th birthday, and very much like with Fernando and very much like with Lewis, he is proving that age, he's still got it. And you've still got time to click on this video over here, which I know you will enjoy, as well as maybe checking out the vlog that Wim and I did over at Zandvoort itself for the weekend. I'll just go and freshen myself up because it was a very long weekend. I'll be right with you.